You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. I, of course, am your host, Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today's date is something like the 14th of September, 2023, actually one of my favorite times of year in the early fall. I implore everybody, as I do pretty much every show I do, to not forget Sven Longshanks. As I said last week, as far as I know, he's on lockdown, not because of any discipline issue with anyone, but because of staff shortages. Of course, he shouldn't be there at all, but please keep him in mind, everything from prayers to money to cards and letters. But today, I want to talk about something, and a lot of this is not going to be all that new for long-time listeners, but it does go back a few years. And there's been a few articles recently coming out on how ridiculous the sanctions on, in particular, Russia are. And if you remember, about 4 years ago, I did a lecture and my other series and a paper on, which is on Patreon, it's like 20 pages, on what a sanction actually is, its legal foundation, and how and why they fail. And it's an original take, like everything I do. But because it's on Patreon, it really can't be stolen, because it's only open to subscribers. Thus, it's probably a good idea for you to subscribe to it. Now, specifically, though, in my paper on sanctions, I didn't mention Russia, because I've mentioned that and a whole bunch of others. I just use examples, everything from North Korea to Iran. Peter Koenig, who I've cited 100 times on here, his article's from September 12th, and he mentions the absolutely airheaded energy minister of Belgium, Tina van der Staten, who, by the way, has no knowledge of energy whatsoever. She's a researcher on AIDS in Africa, not just Africa, Burkina Faso, specifically. And you notice this phenomenon a lot, especially with women, but everyone. So many of the defense ministers that I've been making fun of recently in Northern Europe are females who have never seen a uniform before, let alone a battlefield. And it just goes to show who's really running this. But van der Staten is someone who is part of the Green Movement. She's a complete conformist. One of the few who was not educated in the U.S., but she's, of course, a native Westerner, sort of. And strangely, she made an announcement saying that the EU really needs to start reducing the imports of Russian gas. And, of course, in the process of saying that, to eliminate fossil fuels by 2027. I don't know where she got that year from, but wait a minute. What do you mean reduce the importing of Russian gas? Well, this goes to the heart of what in heaven's name a sanction might be. They're announcing new sanctions on Russia, but they ran out of sanctions when Obama was president. What are they talking about? There's an NGO, Global Witness, which he also cites, who claims that Belgium, well, I mean, this is public knowledge, so Belgium is the third largest importer of Russian liquefied natural gas, LNG, in the world. Or I should say in Europe, or at least the EU. Belgium accounts for 17, almost 20% of Russia's exports. Only China and Spain, so this is worldwide, only China and Spain import more. Well, I thought all this was sanctioned. Now, the specialist on AIDS at Justin Burkina Faso somehow becomes energy minister. I don't get the connection, but she does what she's told, I guess. She did an interview with the Financial Times where she stated that she wasn't all that happy about this very fact. Now, of course, she doesn't know too much about her portfolio. She says the Belgium's share of Russian gas is only about 2.8% of Europe's imports. And she says the rest was in transit. But the Global Witness NGO, of course, contradicted her entirely. But she was eventually forced to admit that while Belgium, of course, the headquarters of the EU, supports these stupid sanctions on Russian fuel, it wasn't going to happen. I've been told, even before Obama was president, and I talked about it back then and wrote about it back then, that all this had been sanctioned. Sanctioned, that is, you couldn't import that sort of thing anymore. Well, it was years ago where I did a lengthy paper, as I said, on that topic. I want to mention that here in just a minute. But the Chancellor of Austria, Karl Niemeyer, was forced to admit that LNG, Russian LNG, was extremely difficult to replace. You know, we talk about a natural monopoly when the infrastructure can only really be built and used by one provider. That's why there's not really competition in SOAR service, is because there's really only, you know, how many pipes are you going to get there? There's only one set of pipes, there's only one set of, you know, only one foundation of infrastructure. And he said, well, the way the pipeline system is arranged, you can't really replace Russian gas. Now, remember, the American capitalists in this field said, we will supply Europe for whatever Russia is now not going to be able to do. That hasn't happened. And it hasn't happened, as I said at the time, because to ship American liquefied natural gas to Europe would be immensely expensive because it's a long distance. And of course, with all of her nonsense, the Belgian energy minister seems to be completely unaware of the fact that the economy that she is supposed to represent is in the process of total collapse and total deindustrialization. Now, what Koenig also says, and of course I've said this pretty much every day of my life for the last 10 years in one capacity or another, is that this comes from the demands of Washington, D.C. and New York City. This wouldn't be happening without the demand of the Americans for this kind of position. You have an utterly corrupt European leadership, and specifically in Germany, to the point where this is a unique era that we're living in. You have economies, because there are actual sanctions on certain things, where you have an economy or a set of economies committing suicide. And Koenig's smart enough to say that, well, it's not really Washington, it's the financial overlords who pull the strings there. And the politicians are the ones who pretend to run things. But if Van der Straeten is a politician, she doesn't know anything. And that's exactly how they like their politicians. But the UK Guardian, let me quote it here. The EU bought 22 million cubic meters of Russian liquefied natural gas between January and July of this year, compared with 15 million during the same period in 2021. And the NGO says buying Russian gas has the same impact as buying Russian oil. Both fund the war in Ukraine, and every euro means more bloodshed. Now, you would expect nothing more intelligent from an NGO of any kind. NGOs are financed by these very corporations that we're talking about here. Well, there seems to be a loophole for liquefied natural gas. Now, there are sanctions on petroleum, which is obvious, but I thought the gas main was turned off. But the stupid comment about, you know, this funds the war in Ukraine, as if this is how Russia makes most of its money, And either they don't know or they don't want to know that, of course, this was a NATO-provoked war. You know, another point I've made, and I actually have a paper on this on Patreon, is what really runs the Russian economy. Lazy and incompetent professors and journalists think it's oil and gas. Well, that might be the more strategic elements. Actually, uranium would be its most strategic, a literal element that that the Americans buy in large amounts. But there's a chart that's come out delineating the imports from Russia, that is to say, exported into the European Union. And there's a list here. There's actually something like 90 items. So on this list, you know, mineral fuels and oils and stuff like that, $156 billion last year. $6 billion for iron and steel. This is just going to the EU. Precious stones and metals, I'm assuming that's going to mean gold, but they do have separate categories for nickel, aluminum, and copper. As the Russian law states now, you can't export that, which is a very good idea. But that's almost $4 billion into the European Union. Nickel, almost $4 billion in 22. Aluminum, $3 billion. Copper, $3 billion just for the European Union in 1 year. And fertilizers, almost $3 billion. Inorganic chemicals and their variants. Precious metal compounds, almost $3 billion. All forms of wood and charcoal, not quite $2 billion. Organic chemicals, not quite $2 billion. And on this list, there's 82 more examples of this. Well, where are these sanctions? If you remember, every week, starting from the, you know, almost the beginning of the 2000s, every week there was a new set of sanctions announced. Last year, the imports from Russia into the EU almost set a record. They're the third largest in recent memory. In other words, Europe can't live without imports from Russia. But of course, the reverse is certainly not true. Now, of course, he asked the obvious question, why the hell is Russia selling this stuff to countries that hate them? Russia does not need Europe for much of anything. But when I wrote about sanctions back in 2020, I noted that it's rare that anyone actually can define the term. It's usually a vague reference to some law, a federally mandated restraint of trade against a foreign government. But I also pointed out that that's only partially true. The law in this field, I mean, this is a complex legal matter, but sanctions are semi-enforceable at best. Now, the average American is looking at sanctions and saying, well, this must mean that the U.S. is so powerful that being forbidden to trade with it is just going to strangle the target country. Now, of course, apart from the ethical problems there, an approach can never become federal law. The idea that, at least in theory, American law is based around private property, the Fourth and Fifth Amendments of the Constitution prohibit attacks on it without a specific court order, legally, it's very tough to enforce any of this stuff. Sanctions law and the executive level instructions that go along with sanctions law have so many loopholes and so many exceptions that I came to the conclusion years ago that sanctions were in fact rhetorical. And Koenig asked the same question. He says, are these just propaganda? And of course, a few years ago I said yes. Corporations are not going to accept anything that doesn't benefit them. At the same time, it's pretty clear that, and these aren't loopholes. It's not like they discovered something, a penumbra of the law. I shouldn't really use the word loopholes. It's inherent in the law that they can find ways to trade anyway. They're aware, I mean, as much as they don't want to be aware, that the Russian economy is stronger than it has ever been because of this. it's hard to tell a billionaire where and when he could make money. I mean, after all, he's paid for this government. Then I ask the question, how often do you ever hear of an American firm or an individual being dragged into court for violating international sanctions? I had to go searching and searching to find something, and I didn't find it. I found foreign companies that might do business in America. But even there, it's a handful of cases. And you need a court case. You just simply can't come down on somebody. Technically, the Emergency Economic Powers Act, the punishment is a civil matter. It's maxed out at $250,000, $250,000. But criminally, it can, if it's in fact a criminal case, upon conviction, be fined not more than $1 million. And if it's they make it, you know, if it's a natural person, that is to say, rather than a corporate person, there may be a prison term for not more than 20 years or both. Now, back in when I wrote this in 2020, I looked at the Treasury Department's list of sanctions evaders. And it was dated February of 2019. There's not a single American company listed there. I mean, a company can have these cases in court for decades. And in the process, thanks to discovery, the government has to turn over all of its documents. That's not in anybody's interest. Now, I use the example of the Iraq-Libya Sanctions Act, and Public Law 104-172. That includes Iran, by the way. And like all of these bills, all these laws concerning sanctions, the president can waive it, specific sanctions on specific things, on a case-by-case basis. So inherent to the law is selective enforcement. Now, for a sanction law to be legal, now we do live in a lawless society, but in terms of legality, you have to target, of course, a specific country, specific people and institutions in the country, and you have to list them out, and you have to list out the products and, you know, and how that furthers American foreign policy. And in this law, it said that these products, people, whatever, that are being sanctioned, quote, directly and significantly contributed to the enhancement of Iran's ability to develop petroleum resources. And, of course, it spells out the nuclear industry, et cetera, state-owned businesses. And it has to provide the names of persons and the institutions affected and for how long, especially if they're private actors. But sanctions are grandfathered to begin with. Further, a sanction has to, the law inherently has to explain what happens if the affected state then removes the reason, you know, that they do something different. If the target government has made strides to accommodate American demands, sanctions have to be listed, at least in part. That in and of itself is so vague that sanctions are whatever the regime wants them to be. It's kind of like international law. Absolutely. Other than as a rhetorical device, it's a meaningless conception, which is good news. And because these laws are often written at a time of great public excitement, they're written very quickly. So they could talk about sanctions all they want. And let me, for the last thing in that paper, let me quote concerning that a law dealing with Iran. This is what the Treasury Department says a sanction is supposed to do, or really what it is. In general, a person may not export from the U.S. any goods, technology, or services if that person knows or has reason to know such items are intended specifically for supply, transshipment, or re-exportation to Iran. Such exportation is prohibited if the exporter knows or has reason to know the U.S. items are intended specifically for use in the production of or commingling with or for incorporation into goods, technology, or services to be directly or indirectly supplied, transshipped, or re-exported exclusively or predominantly to Iran or the government of Iran. Now, I read that and I realized it's just not true. That's a scare tactic. They're not bound to tell the truth in any of these things. There is no such thing as a blanket ban. The only time that what I just quoted from the Treasury Department is true is when they specifically give something, you know, sending uranium is an issue because it could be used for nuclear power or nuclear weapons, and that's a bad thing. But if they don't do it for a certain amount of time, we have to lift the sanctions. There was an alleged executive order banning all trade with Iran. In 2019, trade with that country was still $100 million. The U.S. doesn't get any oil from the Islamic State, the Islamic Republic. And in that particular case, it really only, and it, again, I'm quoting the Treasury Department here, these prohibitions apply to transactions by the United States persons in locations outside the U.S. with respect to goods or services which are of Iranian origin or owned or controlled by the government of Iran. And then they list prohibited groups and persons, you know, institutions, government agencies. And even when they mention a private sector elite, they have to be connected with the state. It doesn't apply to private sector actors without those type of connections. And this is part of the reason why there's 150 companies invested in Iran. So that answers the question. And no one's mentioning this, of course, even though I did this a long time ago. That's really what a sanction is. It is a rhetorical matter. But it does have more force when you do have dependent countries. Russia is not one. China is not one. At least they're not anymore. But a place like Venezuela might be. You know, Mexico certainly would be. But Russia, and I, you know, this is some people just, they can't wrap their brain around this, but Russia sold almost $2 billion in nuclear products to companies in the U.S. and Europe. And despite the alleged sanctions, and not just because of Ukraine, but because of a million other things going back years. And of course, I've also said 100 times that this has been a blessing to Russia, that Russia is growing far more diversified, far more powerful, and just the general GDP is going up, especially in manufacturing, not just despite sanctions, but because of sanctions. It may well be the case that companies just don't want to test it, because that would be awful PR, but that might be, you know, smaller companies who don't have the resources that, you know, Microsoft has. But sanctions allowed, or even just the idea, not even necessarily sanctions as such. Of course, they mention, you know, the oil companies and that may be enforced, although not necessarily with Americans. If the nuclear industry isn't sanctioned, then nothing is sanctioned. But Russia turned to the third world, which I've been talking about since I was in my 20s. And because of that, because of the Russo-Chinese alliance, the third world becomes more powerful, which is good news for us. Not in the sense of things like immigration, but in fact, that would be a break on immigration. But because they're not brainwashed by the left. We all know what's happening in Africa. Russia's now very well integrated into the Asian economic complex, which is a wonderful thing. There's not a whole lot of liberalism there, of course, unless you have color revolutionaries like in Hong Kong educated in the U.S. Last week, we talked about the expansion of BRICS and what that might mean. The U.S., you know, the purchases of uranium by the United States from Russia have doubled since last year, that is 2022. The Americans, and whether this is, you know, I think that a lot of this is private actors, very vague here, bought 400 tons of uranium from Russia just in the first half, more than double the amount in the first half of 2022, the very highest level since the early 2000s. Now, I want to make it clear, Russian oil is banned, but fuels deriving from Russian petroleum still flow into Europe. It's not enough to stop the collapse. Although, as I've said many times before, Europe had been in an advanced state of collapse and decay long before even Russian sanctions started. Before all of this happened, Belgium's debt is like 300% of GDP. Sometimes I wish the sanctions were more real. But it took a very short period of time. I mean, India was broken from the Western alliance because of sanctions. sales of oil and gas to China have always been very high. But so, you know, India and Turkey have seen giant increases. Now, they could turn that in those countries, turn it into different petroleum products, and then export it into the West. But I was talking about with the natural gas, that's directly from Russian pipes. The West just can't suddenly build very complex, very expensive pipes with a war going on through a whole bunch of countries overnight. But the Americans were, that was the implication of what the regime was saying a few years ago. India's oil imports from Russia peaked at about 70 million barrels this last May, which is about 10 times what in May of 2021. And India shipped maybe 5 million barrels of diesel and 3 million barrels of jet fuel to the EU in June, compared to half that or less than half that in 2022 and 2021. Now, I thought at the time when these sanctions were announced, I thought it was just too obvious to even mention that, well, why can't they just use a third party? There has to be ways to close that loophole. It's the most obvious thing in the world. Oh, apparently not. They just have to add an extra step. That extra step is in Russia's strategic interest. Of course, Ukraine has called on the West, and this is from Rodney Atkinson's article last week, wants to ban supply of all refined oil products to G7 countries if they were produced initially from Russian oil. There, you have the G7 countries saying no. And I want to reiterate, Europe was on the brink of collapse long before COVID. Yeah, it's true that energy costs have gone through the roof. That could be very much a matter of gouging than anything else. We have a great excuse, if you're an oil company, to jack up the price. There's only a few of them. And Atkinson, too, talks about the increases of importing in certain products into the EU. The EU importing products from Russia. 40% increase over 2021. And that's Russian natural gas. It really is almost unenforceable to say that if there's a little bit of a Russian product in something coming from, say, India, you can't allow it. That would just be prohibitive. There's no way you can do that. And this is just, you know, he mentions a great case of backfiring sanctions where Germany stopped Russian gas. That's true. Only to import massive amounts of fertilizers that are produced from the same gas. So cheaper imports of Russian fertilizer have gone up almost 400%. Russia's manufacturing, which has always been pretty strong, especially compared to the U.S., has gone through the roof. And this is even if sanctions were, let's say, 100% enforceable, Russia couldn't export anything into the EU. Every major company that now has to leave Russia realizes that, well, Russian and Chinese companies are going to fill the gap, and they could do it very quickly. This is why, you know, import substitution. I mean, Russia is a classic example. Import substitution, I've been talking about this for a long time. This is when you're trying to create a self-sufficient economy. You usually import certain products. Import substitution is a way for you to make that yourself, or a variation of it. And libertarians and the free market economists would go bonkers over that idea. And anything concerning protectionism, that's a result of protectionism. But that also, depending on the country you're talking about, Russia would be one of those examples that can be self-sufficient. The U.S. could be totally self-sufficient, but it wouldn't have an empire then. So you start wondering, why is there this massive increase in German exports to Kyrgyzstan? Well, the only reason is because from there, it could be exported to Russia. So German car exports to Kazakhstan grew almost 600% between 2021 and 2022. Well, the Kazakh economy didn't suddenly become all millionaires. No, that was the way that they can, they, like places like Mercedes-Benz, continued to make money in Russia. And you have these numbers everywhere. Armenia, same thing. 761% increase in a year. Exports of chemical products to Armenia, 110%. I could go on. That's the extra step needed to get around sanctions, which, you know, they probably can get away with, but they're not going to test the system. Well, the Russian Rosatom, again, a state company, still the world's largest supplier of uranium, as I you know, hinted at before. And it supplies something like, well, the U.S. has, what, 92 nuclear reactors, and it supplies about 25% of those. And you have a situation where maybe, I don't know, what, 20% of American electricity in the U.S. comes from nuclear plants. The USA is the world's largest producer of nuclear power, about 30% of the globe's output. Russia is critical to this. In fact, the U.S. is quite dependent on Russia in this respect. Thanks to the environmentalist movement, the last uranium enrichment facility in the U.S. closed in, I think, 2013. Atkinson, I think, mentions that too. If it were to be cut off tomorrow, the nuclear fuel reserve will last for just over a year. Last month, the U.S. sharply, right, I guess it was revealed for the first time, the U.S. sharply increased its purchases. And when I say uranium, I mean uranium-235, which in the natural world is something like, you know, 0.01% of all uranium that can be mined. 235 is that which can easily sustain a nuclear chain reaction. But Russia is by far the largest producer of that. And the volume, if you want to measure it by volume, of these Russian deliveries of nuclear fuel increased almost 200%. And that came to roughly $700 million or $1 billion, which is a record number controlled for inflation since 2002. Some of you may have heard about Kaya Kallas, another one of these utter incompetence. She's the prime minister of Estonia, as if that matters. And she is, you know, she hates everything Russian, so she's a celebrity, despite large Russian minorities there. And she's one of these people who very ignorantly was yelling about, you know, all trade with Russia should cease, including anything that has a little Russian piece in it. Now, of course, she's a multimillionaire. She married Arvo Holik. And this was a little bit of a scandal that hit the American press. Arvo owns Stark Logistics. It's like a transport company. He's one of the owners, anyway. And as of a few days ago, was still operating in Russia. And the prime minister, Kallas, sent a so-called loan of 350,000 euros to her husband's other company, Novaria Consulting, which holds a 25% stake in Stark. Now, as of a few hours ago, I'm saying this exactly, 2:38 p.m. EST, September 13th. A couple hours ago, Halleck has sold off his share. So on the one hand, you have this airhead yelling about how evil Russia is, inherently evil Russia is, and demanding for every other company that they should stop trading with Russia, and yet up until a few hours ago, she was personally profiting from her husband's 25% share in Stark Logistics. And you know that you can find examples of this everywhere, and I guarantee you in the Ukrainian government, you have plenty of examples of this. Remember, nothing is what it seems. Remember that it's always worse than you think. And remember that the regime is always going to find a way to make money. That's a specifically Jewish idea, but it's a mainstream idea now. They're always going to find a way to make money, and usually through lying and deception. That's the regime in a nutshell. Thank you, everyone. I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.